Hello, everyone, and welcome back to A Closer Look True Crime Podcast, or welcome if you are new. Today, we're going to be talking about the Easter Sunday Massacre, or the case of James Rupert. This case I came across quite a while ago, and it's been 49 years this week when I'm recording since this case took place. So without further ado, let's get right into today's episode. So James Rupert had a bit of a rough childhood, but it isn't as bad as some of the other childhoods I've talked about in previous episodes. He was born to his mother Charity and father Leonard and grew up as the youngest child with an older brother named Leonard Jr. He was definitely not the favorite child, to say the least, and it left him with low self-esteem and a lot of resentment towards his family. Growing up, Charity would always say that she wishes James was a girl and was disappointed when he was born because she only wanted a second child so that she could have a boy and a girl and have the perfect family, which would definitely hurt a child's feelings and make them feel unwanted and unloved. His father, Leonard, also had a fiery temper and was not affectionate to either of his sons, but especially James. And when James was 12 and Leonard Jr. was 14, their father actually passed away from tuberculosis at the age of 37. After their father's death, Leo kind of became the father figure in the house and took on a lot of his dad's roles. This included feeling like he was allowed to pick on James and make fun of him for not being as much of a man as him and not being as important as him in the family. The brothers would argue a lot, and Charity always took the side of her favorite son, Leo. The brothers were also always heavily compared. James was a smaller man, standing at 5'6" and weighing about 135 pounds for most of his life, whereas Leo was always tall and muscly and just generally more manly than James. Leo never seemed to have troubles in school and got whatever he wanted handed to him on a silver platter, or at least that's how James saw it. And when James was 16, he actually got so sick of this that he ran away and tried to hang himself with a bedsheet. This wasn't successful, obviously, and he returned home shortly after. Growing up, James was described as modest, bookish, helpful, unremarkable, and just generally quiet. He also had no police record prior to the massacre and just really didn't seem like the type of person that would be violent in any way. So fast forward to 1975, James was getting really sick of how successful Leo was becoming. He was a successful electrical engineer, he had a wife, who was actually one of James's previous girlfriends, which is a little weird, 8 kids, a house, and just this perfect life, whereas James was a college dropout who had trained to become a draftsman but had been unemployed for quite a while at the time. He owed Charity and Leo a lot of money as he lost what little cash he had in the recent stock market crash. He never seemed to be able to get a girlfriend that he could keep and was still living at home with Charity at the time. She was also beginning to get very frustrated with James and his inability to be successful, hold a steady job, as well as his drinking problem at the time. She had even threatened to evict him from her home more than once, and he was just at an all-time low and super depressed in the months around the murders. It's believed that James was actually planning these murders for about a month in advance. He had been asking about silencers for his guns, purchasing a lot of ammunition, became really interested in target practice, and had made some weird comments about his family. The night before the murders, on March 29th, 1975, it was his 41st birthday. Multiple witnesses had seen him shooting cans with his .22 pistol and .22 rifle along the Great Miami River in Hamilton before going out to a bar. And this evening was like most others around this time in James's life, as he had actually been going out to bars 7 nights a week for quite a while, which was part of the reason his mom was threatening to evict him. But while he was at the bar that night, he ended up talking with an employee named Wanda Bishop, and he told her about his mom's standards and demands of him and how she was trying to evict him and that he needed to, quote, solve the problem. Then James left the bar at 11 p.m. and ended up coming back shortly after and staying until the bar closed at 2:30 a.m. And when he came back to the bar, Wanda asked him if he had solved the problem, and he said, quote, no, not yet. So, quite suspicious considering what follows the next day. So the next day was March 30th, 1975. It was Easter Sunday, and Leo, his wife Alma, their 8 children, and Charity were at Charity's house to celebrate Easter and have dinner. They had an Easter egg hunt on the front lawn for Leo's kids, and meanwhile, James was upstairs sleeping off his late night at the bar. Then at 4 p.m., James finally woke up and loaded two handguns and a rifle upstairs in the home. Downstairs, Charity was in the kitchen with Leo, Alma, and a few of their kids preparing dinner while the other ones were playing in the living room. So James walked downstairs to the kitchen, shot his brother Leo in the head, shot Alma, and then Charity lunged at him, and he shot her once in the head and twice in the chest. He then killed David, who was 11, Teresa, who was 9, and Carol, who was 13. Then he turned the corner to walk into the living room and shot the rest of his remaining nieces and nephews one at a time. Anne, who was 12, Leonard III, who was 17, Michael, who was 16, Thomas, who was 15, and the youngest, John, who was only 4 years old. Then once he had shot all of them, he went back around and shot them all a second time to make sure they were dead, which is crazy. And he had shot 35 rounds total and didn't end up using his rifle. And the craziest thing about this is that it only took a grand total of 5 minutes or less. And the only sign of struggle was a knocked over waste paper basket. Then, hours later, James called the police and said there has been a shooting. And when the authorities arrived, he was just waiting inside the front door to greet them. The crime scene was so horrific, and there was a lot of blood, as you can imagine. James was arrested and charged that day with 11 counts of aggravated homicide. He was very uncooperative with police, even though it was so obvious that he was the one who was behind this, and decided to stay silent and refuse to answer questions. And funny enough, the murders absolutely shocked the town of Hamilton. Everyone who knew James couldn't believe he was capable of any type of violence. Everyone who knew James couldn't believe he was capable of any type of violence, let alone killing 11 family members, and they had always seen the Ruperts as a nice family. So the first trial took place in Hamilton, Ohio in June of 1975, where James was found guilty on all 11 counts and was sentenced to life in prison on July 3rd. However, a mistrial was declared because the panel of judges didn't know if the ruling had to be unanimous or majority, and they were also concerned that having a retrial in the same town as the murders would have brought in a lot of bias, and just having a trial in general in the same town as the murders would have been not very ethical and not very right. So the retrial took place in Findlay, Ohio on July 23rd, 1975, and because there was a chance the ruling could go differently and he could get a lesser sentence, the prosecutors decided to reveal more evidence they didn't bother talking about before, including witnesses seeing James ask about silencers, being seen target practicing the night before, as well as the conversation he had at the bar with Wanda about his mother. And that same month, he received 11 consecutive life sentences, but James' defense attorney decided to appeal this verdict, saying that he was convinced his client was insane and that a new trial was to be granted. So it was granted, and on July 23rd, 1982, another three-judge panel found Robert guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder for Charity and Leo, but found him not guilty on the other 9 counts of murder for reason of insanity. He received 2 consecutive life sentences and was sent to prison. I would also like to mention that while the murders took place and the trial took place, capital punishment had been suspended in the U.S., so it was impossible for James to receive the death penalty. So that was completely off the table, and they were really going for life in prison or 11 consecutive life sentences, but this was all they got for reason of insanity. So after being in prison for over 15 years in June of 1995, he was granted a parole hearing, but his release was denied. Then he received another hearing 10 years later in 2005, and another in April of 2015. Both of those were denied. In 2015, the Allen Oakwood Correctional Institution also released a statement regarding James saying, quote, "The inmate has not completed any recommended programming and does not appear to be willing to do so. The inmate's record notes negative institutional conduct. The inmate took the lives of multiple victims. There has been a strong community objection to his release. The release of this inmate would not be in the best interest of justice." Then in 2019, after serving time in Allen Correctional Institution as well as the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility, he was moved to the Franklin Medical Center because his health was just getting worse and worse by the day. His next parole hearing was set for April of 2025, which would have been this upcoming year, but on June 4th, 2022, at the age of 88, James Rupert passed away from natural causes. As for the victims, all 11 were buried in Arlington Memorial Gardens in Cincinnati, Ohio. A year after the murders, Charity's house was opened to the public and all of its contents were auctioned off. The house was later cleaned up and recarpeted and rented to a new family that had just moved to the area, and they had no idea that the murders had taken place there. The family eventually moved out after claiming to hear voices and other unexpected noises, and when they found out about the murders, they were just a little bit freaked out, as most people would be. Other families have moved in and out over the years, but I believe the house is actually still being lived in to this day. Anyways, let me know what you guys thought of this case. I found it absolutely mind-blowing. I've never seen a case like this one, and I just can't believe that it played out how it did. Let me know if you think that James's childhood is what led him to be like this, or if he just had some weird underlying mental health disorders. It's obvious that he struggled with mental health, but it's interesting to think about if maybe his childhood had gone differently, this might not have happened. Anyways, I hope you all enjoyed today's episode as much as I enjoyed creating it for you all, and I hope to see you next Monday for another episode on A Closer Look True Crime Podcast.